Today is International Overdose Awareness Day. The state is reaffirming its commitment to combating the overdose crisis and bring attention to addiction, recovery, and overdose prevention resources. We thought it was very fitting to check in with the Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services, especially today. Joining us from the department, Louisa Barnett and Christopher McClure. Louisa and Chris, thank you both so much for being here. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having us, Melissa.
Very welcome. Do we have Chris here on the line as well?
Yes.
Good morning. Thank you for having us. Hi. Yeah, of course. Just making sure I got us all connected. I think it's really important, especially on a day like today, that we not only bring resources to the forefront, making sure people know how to get connected, but also just talking about where we're at as a state. Do we have any recent overdose statistics for Connecticut that we can share?
We do. Actually, our statistics are verified and confirmed by the Office of the Chief Medical Examiner. So there is a little bit of a lag in the numbers that we report. But we do have confirmed data for 2025, and we had 836 deaths in the calendar year 2025, which is a pretty horrific number. However, it has been steadily going down from our peak in 2021, which was around 1,500. So making progress, and yet the number is still pretty high.
What do you believe is behind Connecticut's decline in overdose deaths?
So we can't say definitely because this is difficult to do, to assess, but we do see a big correlation with the distribution of naloxone. So naloxone, you may know it by brand name Narcan. It is an opioid antagonist medication. It's used to reverse an active overdose. It's a simple and easy to use nasal spray. It only works on opioid receptors, which means you cannot harm somebody by administering it if they do not need it. If they do need it, you would be saving a life. So in 2021, the medication was approved by FDA to be sold over the counter. It's available at pharmacies, and our opioid services division at the department has been working tirelessly to make sure that this medication is available to people and kind of at arm's reach. So we distribute it for at no cost to organizations around the state, including nonprofits, emergency responders, anybody who asks, really. We distribute to them to distribute to community members. And we do see an association between how much naloxone is distributed and the deaths coming down. So we do think naloxone really helps. That's one thing. We do have with the infusion of federal dollars, as well as the opioid settlement dollars, there are many resources available. So it may be a combination of all of the treatment, recovery, support, harm reduction, outreach, engagement efforts together with naloxone. There is also a change in the drug supply. We do see that changing. And so we think that might have an effect as well.
And again, we have Louisa here as well as Chris, and they are both with the Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services. And on this International Overdose Awareness Day, there's kind of two different, I'd say, headlines that we are following. Connecticut has seen a 45% decline in fatal drug overdoses from the 2021 peak. However, we still have lost over 800 people to overdose in just the last year in 2025. And so we're kind of looking at the big picture here. Yes, Connecticut has made progress, but we certainly haven't cracked the code entirely. I want to keep talking, though, about what is working. So obviously naloxone, making it readily available and people being better trained in how it works, having it available to them, even just having it in your purse or your car, even if you yourself or somebody directly to you is not addicted to drugs, just having it there and, you know, not relying on first responders to have it there as quickly as they can get it, but having it personally is definitely a big deal. What else would you say are either some state programs or strategies that have made measurable impact in recent years?
Sure. So we have really focused on making sure that we have treatment available in the community so that we're trying to really reach folks who aren't coming to us by infusing dollars into mobile treatment. So you may have heard of several mobile opioid treatment programs that are on the streets now in Hartford and New Haven. So those services are out on the street in a large van where folks can just come up to the van and get medications for opioid use disorder. Medications for opioid use disorder are found to be the most evidence-based treatment option for people with opioid use disorder. What else is happening? We have seen a lot of overdoses with people who also use cocaine, so a stimulant. That's not an opioid. So we have implemented what's called contingency management, which helps folks with stimulant use disorder. It's the evidence-based practice for stimulant use disorder, and that's been helpful in mitigating some of that. We have lots of harm reduction programs. We are supporting a Safe But Overdose hotline. We find that folks who use drugs by themselves are at highest risk because there is no one to revive them with naloxone. So there is a Safe Spot. It's a hotline where people can call in and have someone deployed if they're not responding. So they're kind of monitored via phone call. We have harm reduction centers where people can just kind of come in and get resources from people who are like them. We do have a lot of prevention efforts and have lots of resources around supportive housing. We have lots of peer coaching and methadone clinics in our nonprofit providers and emergency departments. Anything else I'm forgetting, Chris, that might be of interest?
Chris, do we
No, but I think I would just go back to we call it the HERO Project. Louisa mentioned it very briefly about supportive housing. It's the largest investment we've been able to make with these settlement dollars so far to get people into homes and then connected to the treatment pathway and hopefully through their path to recovery. That's been a significant investment, and I think will be incredibly impactful as there was a lot of appetite from the community for it.
Would you say there's an intervention or a program you wish Connecticut had more funding for, like you're seeing success in it, but we need to put more attention into it or more focus or more dollars into it to see a bigger impact?
That's an interesting question. I don't have data on the single program that that would be most effective. I think it's the collection of all of them that makes a difference, because it's different people who are impacted. It's really anybody who can be impacted by addiction. So we need to reach all kinds of folks. I think one area where we really could grow is continued efforts around ensuring that folks get medications for opioid use disorder during time of emergency. So possibly EMS kind of initiated MOUD or MOUD initiated in a hospital. More efforts around that would be welcome.
Louisa Barnett and Christopher McClure are both here from the Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services for our state of Connecticut, and we are talking today during International Overdose Awareness Day. We know the state is committed to combating the overdose crisis, and we have seen declines, thank God, in overdose deaths since 2021. However, we still lost in 2025 over 800 people to overdose. And so we are talking about right now some of the misconceptions and maybe the biggest threats we have when it comes to a potential overdose. Well, I want to start with that. What would you say are misconceptions we still carry in 2026 when it comes to understanding addiction and leading to overdose?
So one big misconception is that it affects a certain group of people. In fact, any family can be affected by addiction. It really could happen to anyone. Another misconception is that a loved one could just stop using, that if they do not, then they lack willpower, or that there's some sort of moral failure. So actually, people often use drugs not because they are intending to hurt loved ones, but as relief from unbearable emotions, from either chronic stress, threat, trauma, pain, isolation, even loss of connection. Another common misconception is also that people are overdosing on the street. And in fact, most overdoses take place at a house or residence. That's why it's so important to have naloxone and to know how to use it.
I know just from a news standpoint, another misconception, or a couple of them, honestly, include that you could be using for a really long time, and that's typically who's going to overdose. But correct me if I'm wrong, we've definitely seen where people are using, I mean, even, you know, something that is laced with something deadly like a fentanyl, and it's their first time trying something and they overdose. Right. I mean, so when we talk about overdose, you know, and people thinking like, oh, you're enabling, or you're securing somebody to want to use drugs to the point of an overdose. If you have naloxone available everywhere and you're encouraging people to have naloxone, when in fact, a lot of the times we will see an overdose happen sometimes for first time users, or sometimes for people who are trying something that is laced and they don't have a credible place that they got it from. I don't know if I'm talking out of turn, but that seems to be a huge misconception I have seen just as a journalist.
I agree. You don't have to be, you don't even have to have addiction to be at risk for an opioid overdose. You could be trying out something new. You could be at a party. You could be trying a stimulant or taking a pill that looks like a real pill, and it's really, it really does have fentanyl in it, in a pressed pill. We have had waves of the opioid crisis. It started with overprescribing in the 90s and 2000s. You may have heard of OxyContin, Percocet, and now it's followed really by the introduction of synthetic opioids like fentanyl. So fentanyl it doesn't take much. To be effective and to for a person to be at risk of overdose. So yes, again, having naloxone and knowing how to use it is extremely important.
Would you say fentanyl still remains to be the greatest threat, or what substances do you think are posing the greatest threat right now?
It is still fentanyl that's primarily responsible and involved in most of the overdoses that we see, or overdose deaths. We have seen a decline in what's called xylazine. Xylazine was mixed in with fentanyl often in the last few years. It is a horse tranquilizer. It seems to be replaced with metatomidine right now. So that medication is on the rise. It's also a tranquilizer similar to xylazine. It induces sedation. What I want to stress is naloxone still works. Still do give naloxone if you see, suspect someone is overdosing. The difference with metatomidine or drugs like xylazine is that because it's a sedative, the person might not wake up as easily. So you have to watch for breathing more so than this total wake up that we've seen previously when you use naloxone.
Are you seeing any new or emerging trends that are concerning? And this doesn't have to be a specific substance, but even like I think about TikTok trends and how there will sometimes be challenges that, you know, require somebody to consume something. And to some degree, that absolutely could lead to a bad reaction or even I was thinking about how the Department of Consumer Protection years ago teamed up with the Attorney General, and they were talking about these snacks that are not regulated, and they're ending up in smoke shops or convenience stores illegally. And kids are eating snacks that have THC levels through the roof and ending them in hospitalization. It was one of the biggest reasons that we saw naloxone become available basically anywhere where you can get over-the-counter medications. But are you seeing newer emerging trends that also are concerning, bringing it back to overdose awareness?
The age groups most affected in Connecticut for around opioid overdoses are between 25 and 65. Of course, we're always concerned about risky behaviors by young people. We're not seeing a lot of overdose deaths under 25. We're actually seeing a concerning trend towards the older population. The folks who are overdosing are actually it looks like they're aging, basically.
Interesting.
But the groups are between 25 and 65 in terms of if you divide it up by like 10 or 15 year cohorts, it's almost like equal amounts. When you look at it on a graph, it looks like equal amounts of people are affected.
Wow. That's fascinating. Why do you think that is? I mean, is it stress? Is it pressures from work? Is it the economy? Is it politics? Or, I mean, are we getting into the weeds where it's like we don't have concrete information why 25 to 65 you're seeing more overdose deaths? That is interesting to me.
Yeah, it is very interesting, very difficult to ascertain the exact reasons. I think the COVID pandemic may have had a lot to do with it, because I think isolation can be a factor. I think being alone, not having connections, not having friends and family around you, we definitely saw the greatest spike around that time in overdoses. So I wonder if that has something to do with it.
Yeah, it's devastating to hear those statistics and populations most impacted. But certainly we want to play our part here on WICC in helping people if they need resources, treatment, or more information, that they can do it. And the state has provided a lot of great information through sites like ctaddictionservices.com. There's also the liveloud.org website. I'm going to put those resources on our website, voiceofct.com, if people want to engage, lean in, learn more, and get treatment options. And as mentioned many times in this interview, also want to make sure people know about Narcan. It is readily available. You do not need to be a first responder anymore to get access to this reversal drug. You can literally go to your pharmacy and get it that way. Louisa and Chris, I want to thank you both so much, and the entire Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services, for what you do here in Connecticut. And thank you for talking to us, especially today on International Overdose Awareness Day.